حبيبي، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته.
How are you keeping?
Alhamdulillah, things are wonderful in Durban. The weather is lovely. I got my spear gun ready. I think I'll do some snorkeling today.
MashaAllah, MashaAllah. Story that caught your eye this week.
You know, Maulana, earlier this week I heard a top government official make a statement that had me shouting out very loudly, "You can't be serious, you idiot." Well, idiot is a very mild term to describe this donkey. He is an imbecile of the first order, a complete fool, a supreme dunce, a total nincompoop, an ignoramus, a dimwit, a goat-brained muhu. I can't run out of words to describe this stupid fellow. And Ullu and Mampara all rolled up in one. He really made me so cross. It's all got to do with the issue of Myanmar. Of course, 2 weeks ago I told you about Aung San Suu Kyi, who also said something quite shocking, quite moronic, that she really didn't know why the Rohingyas are leaving. She said she needed to find out. What is this woman smoking? Actually, she knows she's talking nonsense, but she, of course, can't admit that the Rohingyas are being ethnically cleansed because her people will turn against her because, well, they don't like to hear the truth, and she doesn't want to lose power. So, better to speak lies so she doesn't know why they are leaving. But one very clever fellow knows exactly why they are leaving. His name is Win Myat Ai. This is what he said in an interview with Al Jazeera. And who is he? The Myanmar government minister responsible for repatriating Rohingya refugees from Bangladesh has told Al Jazeera the Rohingya may have planned the exodus to give the appearance of ethnic cleansing. Let me just read that again. What did he say? Maybe the Rohingyas may have planned the exodus to give the appearance of ethnic cleansing. Wait a minute, let's just unpack that. This guy is the minister responsible for repatriating the Rohingya refugees from Bangladesh. He has to, that's his job, to make sure that they come back, and his job is to see that they are given homes and security and so on. And he says he knows why they are fleeing Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
It's because, can you believe it, they want to give the world the impression that they are being persecuted. They are just, they are just pretending, you see, acting. Dear listeners, have you ever heard such nonsense in your life? The Rohingya suddenly all decided together, hey, let's burn our homes and let's destroy our villages. Let's just take the clothes that we are wearing and run. We grab some of our children and run. And, oh yes, let some of our women get raped and let's not give our children any food so that they appear very run down, their ribs are showing and so on. And let's just tease the Myanmar army so that they can shoot and kill some of us. And let's find rickety boats to cross the rivers where some of us will drown. And when we get to Bangladesh, then we will sleep out in the open with our families. And then we will give interviews to the media and tell them lies, like how badly the Myanmar government is treating us and so on. How it is chasing us out and ethnic cleansing and all of that. That's what it's called. So we'll tell them that. What a nice plan these Rohingyas have. It's so exciting, eh? and of course they will think that they are such great actors. We really know how to pretend, they will say. So that's the message from this minister, that it's all a game hatched by the Rohingyas to embarrass the Myanmar government. The man is an absolute ass. You know, I saw a harrowing image today on Al Jazeera, where the Al Jazeera journalist is interviewing a lady who's carrying a little baby, maybe just about a year old, and the top of the baby's head is burnt.
Ooh.
And it's, the top of it is burnt, and this woman is blowing on top of the baby's head to keep it cool. It's boiling hot there at the moment in Bangladesh. She's blowing the top of the head to keep it cool, and she says that the baby was burnt by the Myanmar army. And the journalists, when they were being interviewed about what they felt when they were filming this, they were all choked up. This journalist, Jamjum, he had like tears in his eyes. He could barely speak. He was stuck. And so these are harrowing tales. And then again, speaking about donkeys, another one has just raised his silly head. Someone from the past, Maulana, who should keep his big mouth shut. Let me quote you this gem from yesterday's British Guardian newspaper. George W. Bush. Shut. George W. Bush. I don't know it. George W. Bush sharply condemned bigotry, conspiracy theories, and lies in American politics on Thursday, as yesterday, in what seemed to be a coded attack on the presidency of Donald Trump. Can you believe that? This insect crawled up from under his stone to, listen to it again, condemn bigotry, conspiracy theories, and lies in American politics. Woof, that is so mind-boggling, eh? Again, let's unpack what this goat-brained hypocrite said. He condemned bigotry. Well, after the 9/11 attack, he said that all Muslims are not bad, but he kept on repeating the word evil ideology. It's an evil ideology. That, dear listeners, was a veiled reference to Islam. Mm. And it was a dog whistle. I explained this term previously. It is a signal to the anti-Muslim bigots, who the haters of Islam. This was a signal to them to attack Muslims. And since then, Islamophobia has been steadily on the rise. And it just went into fifth gear when Donald Trump became president. But Georgie, well, he started it all. And now he is condemning it. And let's not forget, he spoke about launching a crusade against the evildoers. Wow. That word was used a few hundred years ago. The crusaders from Europe descended on the Holy Land and unleashed their bloodbath on the Muslims in Jerusalem. And let's look at the second part of what he said. He condemned conspiracy theories and lies. Let me repeat that. Conspiracy theories and lies. George W. Bush condemned conspiracy theories and lies. I don't know whether to laugh or cry, Maulana. Seriously, folks. The biggest lie of the century was spoken by George Bush. Weapons of mass destruction. They didn't find any in Iraq, but George Bush unleashed mass destruction on Iraq, and he smashed it to pieces. And yesterday, the donkey came out and declared that there must be no lies in U.S. U.S. politics. Of course, Donald Trump is a serial liar, but George got his PhD in fake news a long time ago. He takes the cake, Pagla number one and Pagla number two. Okay, let's go to the local front. Actually, let's see what's happening next door in Mozambique. Well, something completely bizarre is happening there. Let me read to you the opening lines of our independent newspaper group. Well, I'm going to read much more than the opening lines. It says the town of Gile, in the central Mozambican province of Zambezia, has fallen into utter chaos, the local police admit, because of severe rioting caused by rumors. And what are those rumors? That vampires are active in the area and are conniving with government officials to drink the town people's blood. Rioting in the town was so serious that Gile district administrator has been forced to flee. The Zambezia provincial governor, Abdul Razak, confirmed on Thursday morning that the administrator has taken refuge in the neighboring district of Alto Moloku. According to the Zambezia electronic newspaper, Zopela, the rumors of vampires have been circulating for the past 3 months. The disturbances seem to have begun last week when a mob attacked the home of a businessman in the locality of Muane, accused of being a vampire. The crowd looted the shop, then vandalized the homes of the head of the Muane administrative post and of the local secretary of the ruling Frelimo party. The spokesperson for the provincial police command, Miguel Caetano, told reporters at a press briefing in the provincial capital, Quelimane, on Monday that five people had been arrested in Moane for spreading the rumors about vampires and inciting disorder. The police also recovered five motorcycles, several computers and other electrical equipment stolen in the Moane rioting. Wow, Maulana, isn't that amazing? So, there you are, folks. Here in South Africa, we have the occasional report of mobs killing a person accused of being a witch. In Mozambique, it's vampires.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the one... Maulana?
Yeah.
And I like the one... Here we go again. I don't know. Somebody's hacking us here, Maulana.
Somebody's finding your decision very interesting.
I like the one line in the article. Vampires are active in the area and are conniving with government officials to drink the townspeople's blood. You know what, Maulana?
Hmm.
There's nothing new about people have been saying for a very long time that our politicians are in fact bloodsuckers, eh? Saying that our politicians are bloodsuckers. Anyway, I don't know if you can hear me there.
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, Maulana. You'd rather phone back, Maulana.
Yeah, I think we'll just cut it there and call you back because it seems like there's some sort of a gremlin there. Okay, that was Ibi Daji. He was talking about the story that caught his eye this week, or some of the stories, but it seemed like some sort of a problem with the line. We'll try and get him back on the line shortly, and then continue. He's going to be talking about ISIS seemingly being on their way out, and then he's got his famous light at the end of the tunnel towards the end of the program. Yeah, so that's Ibi Daji, the Big Picture program. Also still to come, the on-air challenge with Maulana Daya. The topic there is the ultimate source of barakah. What is the ultimate source of barakah for Muslims? You can call in once we open the lines after the Big Picture program, or you can send in a voice note to 072-786-1548. That's 072-786-1548. And then also our SMQ for this morning, that if you want your child to marry within your race group because you feel that there'll be greater compatibility, a greater less adaptation when it comes to lifestyle, etc., does that mean that you are racist? Quite a few messages coming in that regard. I'll read those messages before the end of the program, inshallah. We're still trying to get Ibi Daji back on the line to continue with the Big Picture program. Let me read out some of those messages that have come in with regards to the SMQ. Somebody says, Maulana, I believe, Mia Bibi Razi Kya Kare Kazi, that if husband and wife are happy, then it's fine, as long as it's a Muslim and a good clean heart, color and race doesn't matter. Another one says that I think within the South African Muslim Ummah there's a lot of racism. I fell a victim to this. I'm from Cape Town and wanted to marry an Indian Muslim, and her dad refused outright. The Shafi Hanafi issue was a problem for him. May Allah forgive us. Okay, I think we've got Ibi Daji back on the line. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes, sir. I am ready to deal with a very serious subject here, Maulana.
Mm. Somebody dropped a message saying, I love Ibi Daji's optimism, even if it's raining or flooding in Durban. He says it's beautiful sunny weather. So,
well, you know what they say? I always say this. The definition of an optimist is a pessimist who doesn't have all the available facts.
Yeah, so if the curtains are still drawn and you're under the godru, you're assuming that it's bright and sunny. Is ISIS on its way out?
Well, the un-Islamic state of Iraq and Syria is in Sakarat, Maulana.
Mm-hmm.
They are catching it both in Iraq and Syria, and are, by all accounts, on the run. And the whole situation is quite complex, but let me focus on just two areas. That is Raqqa in Syria and Kirkuk in Iraq. Well, as we know, lots of militant groups are involved here, and also the big boys, the U.S., the Iraqi government, and the Syrian government, and Turkey, and Russia. And then, of course, there's also the Kurdish groups and the government of the Kurds itself. As I said, very complex indeed. So let's just focus on these two places, Raqqa and Kirkuk, and let's focus on the involvement of the Kurds or Kurds in these two places. Okay, but first let's find out who are the Kurds. Now, this is a very distinct group of people with their own culture. I've spoken about this before, but just to get a little more context. Mm-hmm. This is a distinct group of people with their own culture, and they are the fourth largest ethnic group in the Middle East, numbering today about 30 million. They always wanted their own state where they could, where they are located. A state they call Kurdistan, which is located at the point where the borders of Syria, Iraq, Turkey, and Iran meet. So part of their land, which they say belong to them, lies in each of these countries. Southeastern Turkey, northwestern Iran, northern Iraq, and northern Syria. And presently there are up to 8 million Kurds in Iraq, about 15 million in Turkey, about 3 million in Syria, and about 10 million in Iran. So why have they not been able to establish their independent country, which they call Kurdistan? Well, there are two points to this answer. Firstly, let's go back a little bit to the First World War, 1916. Britain and France were together fighting the other side being the Germans, the Austrians, and the Ottoman Turks. This is very important, the Ottoman Turks of the Ottoman Empire. And Britain and France told the Arabs that if they rose up and against the Ottoman Empire and joined them against the Turks, who controlled the whole region, known as I said, the Ottoman Empire, then when the Turks are defeated, when the Ottoman Empire is over, then the Arabs will be given a large Arab state made up of all the Arab lands controlled originally by the Turks. But this was a big lie, because two characters, one British and one French, the name is Sykes and the other guy is Picot, they already made a plan in advance. A map was drawn up that would divide the whole region into different states. And so in the end, after the war, the only Arab state that was independent was called Saudi Arabia. Palestine, which was originally to be part of the Arab, this big Arab state, and well, it came under British control and was declared as a homeland for the Jews a short while later. Syria went to the French, and Iraq and Jordan also to the British. The whole thing was was carved up in this way by these two fellows. But when they were drawing up the map of the region, they promised the Kurds that they would have their own independent homeland, Kurdistan. This was publicly expressed by the Treaty of Sèvres of 1920. But just as the Arabs were betrayed, so were the Kurds by the Treaty of Lucerne of 1923. So just 3 years later, a new treaty was signed which said nothing about Kurdistan. And so the land was divided up, part of it, as I said, fell under Turkey, another under Syria, another part in Iran, and another in Iraq. The cake was therefore divided. And do you think that the leaders of these countries will ever say, okay, you can take parts of our countries and form your own state, Kurdistan? Well, there's no chance of that at all. But let's look at northern Iraq, where the Kurds are located. Iraq is, of course, rich in oil, and it is said to have the second largest oil reserves in the world, second largest. And a quarter of its oil is located in the northern region, northern Iraq, where the Kurds are located. When old man Bush bombed Iraq for invading Kuwait way back in 1991, he said to Saddam Hussein, you will not go into northern Iraq. And he also declared a no-fly zone over northern Iraq. So the Iraqi planes could not enter the airspace of the Kurds to bomb them. And so this region in the north was almost completely controlled by the Kurds, and the capital, of course, was the city of Erbil. They got their own government there also. And, of course, being free to sell the oil, they moved through a pipeline through Turkey, and that whole region became very prosperous, quite independent, although still officially part of Iraq. And then came the un-Islamic state, or ISIS. Well, to cut a long story short, ISIS took over large parts of northern Iraq, including the city of Kirkuk. Just outside of Kirkuk are huge oil fields. Kirkuk is just outside the border of the Kurdish province, but there is a huge Kurdish population, about 1 million, in Kirkuk. The Iraqi army tried very hard to recapture Kirkuk from ISIS, but were soundly defeated, and then they ran away. Then the Kurdish forces, known as the Peshmerga, they took up the fight and managed to chase out ISIS, and for the past 3 years have controlled this city. So, all over Iraq, ISIS has been on the retreat recently. The U.S. military, the Iraqi forces, the Shia militias, the Iranian groups, they joined forces to smash ISIS. And then something big happened, Maulana. The Kurds decided that while all this is happening, they should push ahead with the quest to be independent of Iraq completely. So on September 25th, the government in the Kurdish province held a referendum which asked the question whether the Kurds want to be independent of Iraq. And over 90% said yes. And that was a big mistake, a dangerous blunder, miscalculation. The Iraqi government said, hey, really? You want to be independent? And so they sent their tanks to Kirkuk, which I said was under the control of the Kurdish Peshmerga. And how long did the battle last? Actually, there was no battle. The whole thing was over in 40 minutes. The Kurdish forces pulled out and the Iraqi army took control of the city. So the dream of the Kurds for independence from Iraq, including Kirkuk, suffered a huge blow. The plan dramatically failed. And the real danger is that Iraqi forces will then enter the Kurdish area, the whole province, and displace the government in Erbil, and that will be the final nail. Total control by the central government in Baghdad. So that is what happened in Kirkuk. And here's the funny part, maybe it's a tragic part. The U.S. always supported the Kurds. The U.S. supports the Iraq army. So you have the Iraqi army against the Kurdish militant groups, both carrying U.S. weapons. One of the reasons why Iraq was confident about its move against the Kurds was that Donald Trump said to the Kurdish president, Masoud Barzani, don't have the referendum for independence. And of course, Masoud didn't listen, and Donald, he gets very easily crossed. And so the Iraqi government got the green light to go in and take over. Okay, just one last word. The Iraqi government has already asked BP, British Petroleum, to come in and develop the oil fields of the Kirkuk province. Now, let's very quickly in a minute go to Syria and to Raqqa. Raqqa is also in the north of Syria. The Kurds there also have ambitions to free this territory because they believe that it belongs to the what they call Kurdistan. ISIS has been in control of Raqqa, but over the past few weeks, Raqqa has almost been completely liberated by the Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, which is mostly Kurdish, supported by U.S. air power. The ISIS fighters in Raqqa are made up of Syrian and foreign fighters, and a deal was just made with the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, the Kurdish forces, where around 275 Syrian ISIS fighters were allowed to leave the city. And by all accounts, they will be free to go back to their communities. What they're going to do there, nobody can say. But the foreign fighters who are still there in Raqqa are not allowed to leave. So what will happen? Will they be killed or will they escape to go back to wherever they came from, Europe or Chechnya or wherever? The Syrian army is just a few kilometers from Raqqa. And, of course, there's a Russian air base just nearby. So, what will happen when the Kurdish-dominated Syrian Democratic Forces take over Raqqa? Will Bashar al-Assad's army move in and confront the Kurds directly? It will be a mighty battle because, as I said, the U.S. is backing the Kurds, the Kurdish militants in northern Syria. So, as you can see, the great optimism that the Kurds had that out of the ashes of the fighting against ISIS in Syria and Iraq, they somehow will create their own state. It's all gone up in smoke now. Turkey, of course, won't want it at all, neither will Iran, and therefore it's the end of a dream, Maulana. Next week, inshallah, dear listeners, I will tell you about why Israel supported the Kurdish referendum.
Okay, light at the end of the tunnel.
Light at the end of the tunnel. You know, one Saturday evening, Rafiq and his two friends were fishing here at Isipingo Beach. That's where I'll be heading in a few minutes with my snorkel. Suddenly, from behind a bush, a cop, actually an inspector of fishing licenses, he jumped out. And Rafiq dropped his rod and started running. The cop started chasing him. They ran and ran, almost 1 kilometer. Then the cop caught up with him. Hey, Weda, show me your fishing license. And Rafiq pulled out his wallet, took out his fishing license and gave it to him. And the cop said, how? Hey, you have a license, so why was you running, eh? And Rafiq replied, hey, boss, I got a license, but my two friends back there don't have it. Okay, one last one. You know, children can say the most embarrassing things at the wrong times. You know, Maulana?
Yeah.
And so we all were having supper with the family. And Leia said, Nana, my daddy was telling my mummy that your car is so dirty. Why you don't clean it? The son-in-law didn't know where to put his face. The Naidu family heard a wonderful lecture at the church on Sunday. It was about how you should be good to people so that you can attract them to Christianity. So they decided to invite the people across the street, the Kumalo family, to come for dinner on the following Saturday night. When the Kumalos came and sat down for dinner, Mrs. Naidu said to her six-year-old son, Ricky, please say grace, please say a short prayer before we eat. And she wanted to show the Christian values to the neighbors. And Ricky was a bit shy, and he said, Ma, I don't know what to say. And his mother was a bit embarrassed, and she said, Ricky, just say what your dad said before breakfast this morning. And the boy very obediently put his hands together, he closed his eyes and said, oh God, we got those horrible people coming for dinner tonight.
Gravy, as always, Jazakallah for your time. Much appreciated.
It's a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Habibi, Habibi.
That was this week's Big Picture program with AB Dawji. He'll be back next week, same place, same time, inshallah.